there's a number attached to all of this. And I think that's the big difference, is now you know what to look for and the impact of your business to get to where you want to be.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO, co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your organization's spend without buying an ERP. However, we are not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Rush Shaw from Modern CFO. Rush is based out of California, USA. And in today's episode, we're specifically going to focus on a favorite, which is service-based businesses, as well as healthcare clients. That, you know, could be small hospitals, local care facilities, things like that, where both of which Rush has experience with. Rush, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe you could kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
What people don't know? Great question. James, again, thank you for having me. One thing I don't really tell a lot of people is I've gone skydiving. And, you know, how it relates to business in general is sometimes you just got to take a leap of faith and knowing you'll be safe, right? But the one thing that skydivers have that they do is they prepare in advance. And they have a safety net just in case something. They have a backup of their parachute just in case something goes wrong. So, you know, I learned always be prepared, have a backup plan, right? But, you know, take a risk that you know is going to be in your favor, right? So just because you're jumping out of a plane doesn't mean you're going without a parachute. So, you know, make sure you plan for the risk, planned risk, as they say. Yeah.
Manage the downside. I like that. So how much skydiving have you done? Have you done it as a one and done, or is it something you take as a hobby?
It was a one and done experience. You know, maybe I'll do it again. I just, you know, it was kind of just nice to have, just kind of have that come in. Yeah. So it was fun. It was actually a great experience to do, at least do it once.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, that's on my bucket list. It does. The thought of it does really scare me. I haven't even been able to do a bungee jump yet, so I don't know about that. Okay, all right. So risk-taking CFO with the right preparation. Let's start off with that then. So Rush, you know, you have to be incredibly top tier to get onto the Gross Profit Podcast. We don't just take anyone off the street. So maybe you could tell us a bit about how you got started and how you've earned the right to call yourself a fractional CFO today.
Sure, absolutely. Great, great question. You know, one of the things about being a CFO is really having experience, right? Knowing what to look for. An experience you just can't get overnight. I have over 20 years of experience in finance, right? Working predominantly in the FP&A roles, but also overseeing large teams and small teams, along with working in small businesses as well. So, you know, In that sense, you kind of see everything, right? You see the worst of things, you see the best of things, you kind of learn how to prepare for things because business changes all the time, right? So with experience, you kind of learn that, hey, maybe there's an issue that happened here. Oh, I've dealt with that before. Let me go back to see what I did when that issue came up. And so maybe we can apply it here, right? Maybe you take a mix of different things. And so that is predominantly where I come in, you know, having 20 plus of experience working with companies, large and small, publicly traded and privately held.
Very good. So maybe more specifically, did you get qualified and how did you get qualified?
Well, I have an MBA, right, from the standpoint. So I do have an MBA that I did from grad school.
Cool.
You know, from a CFO standpoint, so, you know, it's in the U.S., specifically around here, that, you know, the word of the CFO is typically more of a title per se, of just what you do, an experience title, right?
Cool.
As opposed
cool.
to perhaps like a CPA, so more of a, yeah.
You come up more on the business side than the accounting side is.
Exactly, yeah. Right, standpoint, yeah.
And what has been your biggest sort of career achievement so far?
You know, that's a great question. Recently, you know, I started my business about a year and a half ago, so from a career standpoint, it's dramatically changed my mindset and view of things, right? You know, having come from a corporate background, having worked with other businesses from that standpoint, you kind of learn the lens of a CFO, but you never really learn the lens of an owner until you become one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I own my own business, I can really see and understand the stress that happens, the constant juggling that you have to do to manage everything, right? And so It prepared me for many, many more things than I could ever have imagined. But it's been probably the best journey of my life that I've ever taken from a learning standpoint.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a thing, it's a step you take, stepping out into the unknown. I mean, that feeling of, well, I'm not going to eat unless I go kill something today sometimes, right? That sense of like that sense of owning your own destiny is both terrifying and it's kind of amazing, actually. It's amazing to think like sometimes I've been in situations where I'm feeling like, well, how are we going to get through this? And I don't know. You look back and you go, well, we got through it. Like there was no certainty at all, but you sort of make a plan.
I mean, in a way, James, you kind of have done parachuting, I suppose. When you start your own business, right? You have kind of taken that leap of faith and kind of figure out your landing spot, right? So, yeah, it is one of the things you learn.
Well, I've only ever had a W-2 for a grand total of like 18 months of my entire life. So I was,
Yeah.
no one was ever gave me a job. So I had to go make
Yeah.
my own plan. That was the way it
Yeah.
worked for me. Okay, well, great. So you've hung up your shingle as a fractional CFO, but I know that you sort of started when you had a, were in mainstream employment. You had a healthcare background working in healthcare facilities and also now I understand that you help service-based businesses in particular, as well as healthcare. So maybe you could give me a highlight on what are the particular challenges and things you have to look out for if you're running a service-based business compared to any other.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that, part, James. So when you work with service-based businesses, they're a little bit different than working maybe in manufacturing product-based goods, right? In one, you're focused on the product. Hey, what does inventory look like? What is it, what are perhaps maybe oftentimes the cost of goods sold, things like that. You're really focused on that piece. When you're service-based businesses, it's a little bit different because the dynamics and the numbers that you look at are not really based on products, but the number of people and how they work and efficiencies around that, right? So one of the first issues that we look at is around rate, right? How are you priced in the market, right? From a competitive standpoint, is your rate determining where you are in terms of your financials? Because revenue is a mix of two things, right? Rate and volume, right? But I find that many companies oftentimes underprice themselves to be competitive, but then you're in a competitive market of pricing. And only one company's going to win out of that if you do it from that standpoint, if that makes sense, right? So, oftentimes I tell my client, like, look, just because your competitor down the street may have reduced their rate by 10% doesn't mean you have to do the same thing. There are other ways you can do that. It's about establishing a strong brand and presence of who you are. It's okay to charge a higher rate and have a lower volume and still make the same revenue, right? So, but you have to know what numbers to look for. And that's the type of analysis that we do. We look at multiple scenarios saying, hey, what's the optimal rate? How much can sales decrease if you do increase your price, right? But can you still get the revenue at the end of the day, right? So,
Yeah, I used to work weirdly as a voiceover agent, for talent, basically. Kind of an agent. I was kind of a middleman. And I would see it all the time. People would come in to the industry and they would do a job for any money, right? It was kind of a star system. So to get your name on the board, you had to kind of do whatever and it didn't really matter the cost. And then, what would happen was that you had all these people new in the business competing fiercely on price because they thought that's what would make them stand out. And then what would happen is they would do that for 6 or 12 months or 18 months and get burnt out because they're not making any money and it's too hard and they would leave, And then someone else would replace them doing the exact same thing. And then everyone ended up just competing against people who were going out of business, and the irony was like the people in the top 5 or 10%, they were a totally different price bracket, but they were there for years and they would still manage to, they could double 10 times what a new person could, but they knew that competing on price wasn't a way forward, it wasn't sustainable, That's the interesting part.
Yeah, I mean, they created a brand for themselves. They established more of like a legacy of who they are, right? And from that standpoint, people are willing to pay a premium for a service that they knew they can count on. Yeah, so that's one of the first issues.
So how do you go about figuring out a benchmark, for any sort of service? What do you
Yeah, it's often, I mean, There are industry benchmarks that you can look at, but industry benchmarks are only as good as the data that comes in. You know, if all the top tier firms send in their data, all of a sudden the benchmark for that you're comparing is only top tier firms, right? If it's only bottom tier firms that submit data, then you only have that data to compare against, right? So, you know, comparing this in industry data can be only as good as the data in itself, right? Where my focus more is, what does the owner want? What do they want to achieve, regardless of what the industry is doing, right? Because our focus is on them, right? You know, and so we always focus on what's your end goal from what you like to achieve financially, and how do we work back to provide that means of what that goal that we have set to
Very
do.
good. Very good.
And
So all right, so tell me a little bit about your experience or recent clients you've had in the healthcare space.
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I recently just took on a client just about 3 months ago when they came in, and they came in at a very difficult standpoint from where they originally were. They had taken out almost about a $10 million loan to start their company, right? It was a memory care facility, two nurses, really passionate about what they do. I mean, they left a lucrative career, you know, path, a career path of doing nursing for this to say, hey, you know what? I really want to start my own business. After almost a year plus of trying to get the loan, they got their loan, right? But it came with very heavy terms, right? Interest-only payments for the first 18 months, 5-year pre-penalties on that, prime plus 5% on top of that. I mean, it was a massive debt to take on. Also, the other issue was when they submitted their financials originally, when they started their business about a year plus ago, they had hired an outside company to do it. Oftentimes, you know, businesses may hire companies that do business planning for them, and they'll create some kind of financial model. Well, whatever the financial model they got showed losses for the first 3 years of their business. So can you imagine the stress of having a business, opening it up, right? Knowing that you have a $10 million debt you got to pay off, and a financial number that you, a financial model that you, makes no sense to you because they never went over it with you, showing losses for the first 3 years, right? Painful. It's tough to wake up every single day knowing that you'd be putting out fires like that. So they had come to me. It's like, Rush, we're just struggling. You know, somebody, you know, one of our loan officers recommended talking to you to see what we can do if it's a fit for us. And so, you know, we went through a weird process of due diligence and working with them and seeing if we can help them out. And once we brought them on board, we started investigating further into the models that they had, that were given. And in about the first, you know, first, our first meetings are typically like a 2-hour strategy meeting where I'll kind of go over all the details. And at this point, I decided, you know what, let me just look at the model that was given to them and go through it and a fine, you know, with a fine-tooth comb to really understand each and every component of it and have them kind of guide me on what the numbers should be at. When we got done in this 2 hours, a complete change in everything that we had. We were showing profitability in the very first year of that business, right? So they went from losses to profitability, right? But more importantly, to climb you exactly how to get to that number, month by month, person by person, volume by volume, you know, every single detail that he can now know says, look, if I do this, this is the impact it's going to have on my business. Now, you know, now I can change to wake up in the morning and do two things. Either do nothing and be reactive and just see what the day goes like, or I can be proactive and chase after this number and put in the work that I need to do to get all these things lined up early and not wait for it. Right?
So what made the okay, so the old model, like practically on the ground, what changes did they start doing? Like, so before, what did they just say, oh, we have to start spending half as much on this, and we have to, you know, what was.
Multiple parts came in. A part of the models was just not accounting for some of the depreciation or assets early on, right? So it wasn't just done well from that standpoint. So one was an assets-based issue, but more often just from the operational side, you know, one of the big components was that they were doing a lot better than they initially thought they were doing. So, you know, in terms of bringing patients in, so remember, this is a memory care facility. So it's about the number of patients that can come in. Now, you know, for this company, they're an 80-bed facility. In other words, they're going to be limited at some point that their capacity is only at 80, right? So Their whole objective was, well, hey, I gotta start filling these beds as soon as I can early on. And so they started just taking anybody that they could to come in. And oftentimes the patients are a mix of two individuals. One could be from Medicaid, which is our government-based program, right? But they typically pay a lower rate, but they do pay on time. And the other is private pay, right? So individuals who have the means to do it will come in on a private pay basis. You can charge whatever market rate you want for it. And oftentimes the only issue would be that you have accounts receivable if they don't pay on time that you have to go chase after, right? But the modeling mix didn't really account for that. They thought, oh well, we didn't know what we were going to anticipate, so we didn't know what to put in the models. We put like 90% Medicaid rate and 10% private pay. Obviously, though, that drove down the revenue, right? But what they were seeing in reality was that it was more around 70-30. 70 was 70% was Medicaid, and 30% was private pay, right? And so as we created the model, we were like, well, hey, this can actually show the fact that we're actually making more revenue than we anticipated. As a matter of fact, if we can get down to in 60-40, if we can, then that could even allow us to make this much margin from that standpoint. So the difference was, as you can see, they're saying, oh, I thought we would just get whatever the bare minimum is. Like, oh, now I know that if I spend, if I can do the means to do to get the higher level, clients coming, customers coming in, we can make this much additional revenue, right? There's a number attached to all of this. And I think that's the big difference is now you know what to look for in the impact of your business to get to where you want to be, right? Because they needed that revenue and the net income. Revenue is just one component. We'll talk a little bit more about just operations too on the expense side, right? To equal the net income. But what they needed was the ability to pay back that loan as soon as they could. Because otherwise, it was a heavy burden for them. As we're working together, just so you know, over the course of these 3 to 4 months, as we've been working together, we've identified a way to pay that back loan back within 5 years. Imagine that, right? Yeah. Imagine having that loan that you knew you're going to be in debt for 30 years, 30-year loan coming out for you, collateral on a house, negative forecast to saying, hey, I now have a way to pay this off in 5 years if I do these specific things based on the model that we have. Right. I mean, keep in mind the model is theoretical. It's not a perfect world, but it gives you a vision or a plan to go towards, right? Based
Very
on the
good.
numbers that we created and a plan they've established for themselves.
Very good. So tell me about your ideal client. Is it healthcare facilities in particular, or who do you really
Yeah,
serve
we
best?
focus on all service-based businesses. Going back to kind of what I was mentioning earlier, James, too, service-based because of the three issues that we talked a little about, right? One was rate, right? As I've shown you in this example of this client. Two is scheduled utilization, right? What that means is that, if you're a service-based industry, you have overhead costs you have to pay for. Your rent is not going to go away. Whether you have one person coming in or 100 people coming, you still have to pay your rent, right? You still have to pay your staff. Oftentimes, they're salaried or hourly, but they have to be there. So whether it's one person or 100, you still got to pay them, right? So if you don't know, how you're utilizing your staff, how efficient they are, if they're doing the right work, especially if they're facing customers or doing specific projects for you, then you have a schedule utilization problem, right? In other words, the expense can be very high for the low amount of revenue that you're getting in, right? So that's the other thing we look for. So rate is one, schedule utilization is the other that we look at, right? So those are the two main components of a business. Yeah.
Very good. And how can people get in touch with you, Raj?
The best way to get a hold of me is through my website, www.moderncfoservices.com, or email as well at rush@moderncfoservices.com. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. If you just type in Rush Shah CFO, hopefully I'm only Rush Shah out there on LinkedIn, but you can find me from there.
I know Rush is a superstar on LinkedIn. He's got a great, he's
Yeah.
worth following just for his all his LinkedIn work. It's fantastic. Well,
Yeah,
thanks very
thank
much.
you.
And thank you very much for listening. If you've been listening this far, your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/newsletter. You can sign up for our newsletter, get a steady feed of other people's financials bloopers so you can learn from them and maybe not end up in our newsletter in the first place. So that's my motivation. Thanks, Shaw. Thanks for being on the show.